It is time to have an honest conversation about the esports industry and how we got here and where it's going. I'm Devin Nash, and I am super passionate about esports. I formerly ran Counterwatch Gaming. I was the CEO over there, and I also ran Team Dignitas in 2015. I was the head of North America there. And I've been interested in competitive gaming for about as long as I can remember. But as the esports industry came and grew, I've become more and more worried about the direction it's going. There's not a lot of transparent conversation. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors. And no one really has a clear idea of how esports works or some of the real truth behind it. And I've needed to make this video for a long time to try to explain by the end of this video the complete picture of what esports really is and what is going to happen to this industry. I want to do more than just covering the news here. I want to have the difficult conversation of what the esports industry really is and what people haven't talked about for a long time. And I first got onto this, the current news I'm sure everybody's seen with huge layoffs hitting even big popular teams like 100 Thieves, companies like FaZe Clan that were formerly evaluated at $500 million are now worth less than $30 million. You have NRG today acquiring CLG, my former company, and with over 50 people being laid off and the rest, just the LCS being left, as well as TSM unilaterally announcing that they were a very infamous NA team, unilaterally announcing that they're going to be leaving the esports scene more or less. And we just got to talk about how we got here. It's a really horrible state of affairs. It's something that I started talking about over 3 years ago. I made a video called We Need to Talk About the Esports Bubble. And this was a 20-minute video that just went over a lot of the detail about the problems with esports. About 8 months ago, I made a video, Is the End of Esports Coming? And that was heralding this event here that we're at today that unfortunately we need to make this video, which is kind of a full explanation of the real truth behind the esports industry and what happened and what's going to happen. And to start, we really need to understand what esports teams are, because I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding that the esports teams are essentially agencies. So like talent agencies. And what do I mean by that? Well, I mean that, you know, the basic model of an esports agency is you hire players to play competitive games. They go into leagues like OWL or LCS, or they play CSGO. You pay those players to do that. And then those players represent your brand to sponsors. And the idea is that sponsorship revenue will be greater than the amount you pay to do this, right? But there's been some real foul play in esports that kind of have never not allowed this to ever happen. And I'm going to make an argument where I actually think it's not possible to happen at a high level, and that esports is essentially doomed. This is a heavy video. It is something I've had to make for a long time. We're going to talk, I think the first thing I can do is I can talk about all the ways that esports make money. Esports teams should make money in theory. So esports team revenue sources, okay? So we're going to start with prize winnings, and then we're going to go to media rights, and then we're going to go to ticket sales, and then we're going to go to league payouts. And we got a couple more after that, but we'll just start here. So let's talk about prize winnings first. So prize winnings means that if your team, as an esports org, your team makes a championship and wins a championship. Sometimes those can be $100,000, maybe $1 million. The largest ones are maybe like the Dota International, like TI, which is like actually a pretty big prize pool, sometimes like north of like $10 million. But esports teams typically get 5 to 10% of this total, and the rest is just distributed among the coaches and players. Usually, like in the case of the LCS, you have 5 players and a coach and maybe an analyst, and it's just traded then. So for a company that has operating expenses that we're about to see, prize winnings are actually a really negligible amount of the esports pool, and they're not going to make a lot of money off of that. The media rights deal. What is a media rights deal? This is basically permission to broadcast them. So if you look at like America or in Europe, the NFL or the European Soccer League will sell their rights to various television channels for tens of millions of dollars. And we're going to learn why media rights don't work in esports and how no esports team is making money here. But that's actually how a lot of stuff like the NBA and the NFL almost exclusively monetizes like that in sponsorships. Ticket sales, there's barely anything coming here, if anything. I think the idea in esports was that teams would fill out stadiums, and we're going to kind of find out why that didn't really work and isn't going to work. League payouts is the amount that publishers like Riot Games or Blizzard pay teams to be in the league. This ends up being only usually like a few hundred thousand dollars per year. It's actually not that much. And considering that the teams paid franchise fees to be in these leagues, you have to like keep in mind that this is like nothing compared to that. Now, there's also apparel and brand sales. I think that's how you spell apparel. Brand sales. So merch, stuff like that. This has carried orgs. So orgs like 100 Thieves have made their money almost exclusively off of this. But for most organizations, it's basically nothing. And then finally, the one that you probably know a lot about, and that's sponsors. And sponsors, how does that work? Well, sponsorships are companies that pay teams for certain deliverables. Okay, so now you understand basically every single significant revenue source for a esports team. So along those lines, let's look at the esports team operating costs and what it takes to run one. And the number one thing we're going to go through is player salaries. So player salaries are absolutely, totally insane. With reports that C9 Jensen was paid $4.2 million, the highest of any LCS player. But that wasn't just like a one-off. There's several other people within Team Liquid that were over $1 million. Another Team Liquid's three-year impact was $3.4 million. Huni from Team Dignitas for $2.3 million for 2 years. So if you just look at the sources, to give you kind of a perspective on what a sponsorship for an esports team might be, if they were lucky, they'd be very lucky to get $1 million a year off of that sponsorship. But that would be extremely lucky. Most people won't pay esports teams that much. You'll find out why in this video as we talk about it more. But they can expect to make, you know, even $250,000 to $500,000 a year if they're lucky, which will barely pay a fourth of a single player's salary on a five-player team. So right now, we're already seeing a huge problem. But there's also training facilities and housing and compounds. So if you see things like the 100 Thieves compound in LA, pretty much most of the major teams had places like this. Big offices that were custom built and branded for their teams. This is just a huge expense and often costs millions and millions of dollars. And the expectation was that sponsors would pay for this, but that obviously didn't end up transpiring. Again, more stuff we're going to talk about. There's really a lot to go over. But then another one that I think a lot of people don't think is competition travel. So at one time in Counterwatch Gaming, when I ran this the company, we were paying $240,000 a month for player travel. I mean, this is taking 45 players all across the world with support staff, housing them, putting them in hotels. Teams pay for all of that. That's a huge operating expense. That brings me to coaching and support staff. Usually every team has an analyst, a head coach, maybe an assistant coach. There's also all kinds of other people like physical therapists, psychologists, all that kind of stuff to run it. There's also administrative staff, right? So staff that's like people that run like your GMs, your project managers, people like that. There's also marketing and outreach and sales. So people that try to get the sponsorships, right? All the normal costs of a business and agency. Everything from general insurance to whatever have you. And then finally, franchise fees. You've probably read a lot about this, right? If you're in the esports, these were reportedly up to $7 to $10 million for the LCS and greater than $20 million per position for OWL and CDL, the Blizzard leagues. So when the publishers made this happen, they basically forced people to get investment. And if you are understanding that and you kind of understand these two things, you're going to understand the next big thing I'm going to tell you. Which is that essentially, if you want to put the blame of esports' failure on anybody, it is on the publishers, 100%. And I just want to show you the difference here of these revenue sources cannot possibly outpace the esports team operating costs. It's very difficult to run a business, even if your business is just your operating costs for your employees. But there's so many other things that go into an esports business that is like unsupported. We really have to understand the role of publishers, and that's the next section of this video. The publishers, both, and when I refer to publishers, I'm really referring to, I think, Riot Games and Blizzard here, which were the ones that really attempted to build the LCS, which is the League of Legends Championship Series for their game League of Legends, OWL, which is the Overwatch League, and CDL, which is the Call of Duty League, Blizzard asked teams to pay out of their own pocket millions and millions of dollars for the right to participate in these leagues, but then collected all of the sponsorship revenue on top and only paid out the teams a fraction of that. At the same time, those same organizations and publishers did not allow the teams to monetize in ways that would actually make this business model make more sense. So, for example, in the League of Legends championship series, they weren't allowed to do custom skins. They weren't allowed to do revenue share. And Riot has since walked a lot of this back with the Valorant League, their new FPS game, where they now do revenue and skin shares, understanding that these esports things are unsustainable. So they've essentially refused to do that with the LCS, which was their sort of like blood and bread and butter teams. And if you want to understand why the ecosystem is failing, you have to understand that in real, in traditional sports like the NFL or NBA, the conglomeration of teams own the league itself and then distribute the revenue that the league earns from all of its sponsorships and all of its media rights deals. But the publisher Riot and the publisher Blizzard own the IP. In this case, they're the middle person that negotiates everything. So they are the rulemakers. They take everything off the top. They are the people that take the sponsorships first. The sponsorships that are issued, not on a team level, but on a league level, the teams end up getting a very small percentage if they see anything in all of that, and that money goes back into the publisher's pocket. But at the same time, the publisher is making money off of skin sales. The publisher is making money off of off of game sales, off of microtransactions. That is all stuff that, at least in the League of Legends scene, very little was seen by teams, if anything at all. And so those publishers, just like also in OWL and CDL, are taking a huge amount of money off the top. And to be clear, like, these publishers are still losing money on these efforts, right? Like, esports doesn't even make sense for them, but the little money that is being made by them. And then even less is being made by the teams. So at the point when the teams actually come in, the teams are basically glorified babysitters. They're basically, their job is to take care of the players, to house them, to travel, to take care of all their needs, because Riot and Blizzard don't want the liability to do that, those kind of things directly. And then the esports teams are kind of left out to dry to try to find their own sponsorships justified on the idea that they have brands. But the idea that they have brands is kind of silly. And I'm going to explain a little bit later, like, how these esports teams don't make sense from an advertising perspective. But if you just look at some of these teams that are super prominent teams, right? We have, like, Evil Geniuses here with supposedly 597,000 Twitter followers. But you look at their engagement on tweets, they've got 23 likes, 2 retweets, 22 likes, 2 retweets, 4 retweets, 58, 43, right? And these guys aren't the only ones, right? There's, like, FlyQuest, for example. These are LCS teams, by the way. These are, like, teams that have very prominent showings in these competitive leagues. The brand doesn't translate over, right? They might have big following numbers, and there could be different reasons for that. But again, you can just look at the engagement on these tweets, right? 166, 6 retweets, 20 retweets, 100 likes, you know, it goes on and on. And it's like, I'm not sticking it to these teams. I'm just exemplifying that, like, these aren't real brands. Like, they may think of themselves as it, but this is a company with 60 to 70 employees or however many people, and they've got this kind of engagement. And you might say, well, okay, that's not important, but this is how they monetize, right? So this is important. Like, their brand is everything. I could get more retweets or likes on this by talking about my grandma or something on Twitter, and I'm nobody. I'm, like, some guy with 40K, half the followers of these people. So it's just nuts to me that these teams are expected to shoulder the burden of this and then monetize via their sponsors, when in reality, like, they don't have any of that. So understand that, like, the publishers are the problem is the place to start. Like, teams only get a really small cut of the league payouts, and it ends up basically running every team into the red because all of the publishers take the money from it. But they also take ticket sales. They also take all the media rights deals. So who was the OWL league sold to, right? When OWL sold to YouTube, who made that money? Was it the esports teams? No, it was Blizzard. When Riot Games got publishing rights from, was it the baseball league that did it? Who made that money, right? It wasn't the teams. The teams didn't get an extra payout for that. So most of the league revenue share, all of the league-wide sponsors, some of that does get paid down to the teams, but not much, doesn't get past the publishers. And if you understand that, you then understand why esports really can't succeed in its current model with the publishers in the middle. Now, there have been other models made. So, for example, with like the fighting game community, Nintendo kind of steps outside that process, more or less. We've seen some of that not happen this year. And Nintendo's apparently had like more of a direct role, such as in the Smash circuit, and maybe had something to do with like Beyond the Summit. And those things kind of failed on their own accord. But publishers that kind of stay out of it, maybe the teams have better options, but there isn't enough interest in those to garner or advertising interest to garner that kind of revenue for a team to exist there. So we're going to talk about that next, which is the concept of advertising and attention in esports. And to understand this, you have to understand an advertising measurement that is called ROAS, which is Return on Advertising Spend. So if I am a company or a brand, so my current job, I co-own a company that takes care of brands, and we help build ads for brands. So if you're a brand, you come to us, you say, hey, I want to run ads with influencers or creative ads, and we help connect that brand with the influencers and run that campaign, white glove, and just take a small percentage off the top for doing that. So I know a lot about advertising spend. I do millions of dollars of advertising spend a year. And return on advertising spend is one of the most important things that brands care about when we're going to try to sponsor something. And for me, I'm looking for whatever I can get my best return for my brand on so that I can give them the best engagement and the best campaign possible, right? So imagine going to a live stream and you have a really caring audience of 1,000 people that are super into that broadcaster and they'll basically buy anything that broadcaster says. And then imagine going to a 10,000 person audience and that they have no real connection to the actual influencers or anybody associated with it. They're just kind of watching it and because it's entertaining in the moment and they don't have any association. That example is kind of the direct example of what I'm trying to tell you is the difference between esports and like actual influencer activations. The problem with the return on advertising spend from esports is that people aren't really connected, at least anymore, to the brands. And because of that, brands typically get really bad results with esports teams. Now, this isn't necessarily the case with publishers. For example, we've run some money through Riot Games. I've seen a lot of successful campaigns go out of Riot Games. And because they're able to influence the game itself and they're able to incorporate things like discount codes or affiliate links or things like that into their actual client where users are, they have a much higher rate of success. But esports teams don't have that access, so the return on advertising spend is a lot worse. And to understand this, let's say that like I'm selling a shirt for $10, okay? And let's say in this theoretical example, it costs me $9 to make the shirt. So I have $1 extra, right? So that's basically my marketing budget in order to make sure that I can sell this shirt. So if I spend $1 to make $1, my ROAS equals 1-to-1. So really this have to be $8, right? Because then we'd have, is it 9? Yeah, so it says 9, we have $1 left over, but you don't make any money. So let's take it, like I have $1 to spend on marketing and then I make $1 per shirt. That's correct. My ROAS would be 1-to-1. If I had 50 cents to spend on marketing, then my ROAS would be 2-to-1. That makes sense? So basically, your return on advertising spend is for each dollar that you put in, you get X back. And ideally, you want a ROAS of 2-to-3-to-1. And in pay-per-click in Google AdWords, you generally get an average return of like 2-to-3-point-something. But in esports, that same ROAS might be 0.1 or less. And so, in fact, it's often negative. So advertising with an esports team will often get you negative results on your return on advertising spend. I've seen situations that I have to kind of be careful with because these are actual real deals, but I've seen situations where like computer companies have sponsored an esports team over the course of like 2 or 3 years, and they've sold a total of 14 PCs in 2 or 3 years. Like that's how many PCs actually got sold in exchange for like a $200,000 to $250,000 a year sponsorship. That's like a real deal that I know about in esports that happened. And that stuff happens all the time. If you actually calculate the amount of return you're getting from an esports team, it's negligible. It's nothing. Now why? Like why can't esports teams get a good return on investment? Why can't esports teams get good returns on investment? Well, there's actually a bunch of different things that we can go over. And the first one is pretty straightforward that I think everybody will agree with. Players have to trade their time between competing versus advertising. the best players practice the most and don't want to do deliverables. So a deliverable means something that you do in exchange for money for a sponsor. Now, players that are the best at the games that they play are practicing all the time, and that's really all they want to do is practice all the time. So you can imagine that if they're told to advertise some brand or go do a film for it or spend the day taking photos with it, they don't want to do that, right? And esports teams have the problem of cannibalizing themselves every single time that they want to do any kind of sponsorship. They have to cannibalize their own players in order to do that. And the players, they have a brand themselves, but as we saw in the examples of FlyQuest and Evil Geniuses, oftentimes the teams themselves don't have brands. So if a team is represented by somebody like Monster Energy, or a team is represented by somebody like a big brand like that, oftentimes that conversion up doesn't work up. So you see a player like advertising, but like you're not connected enough to that player, you're not connected enough to that brand, to that team to like really buy that thing. Maybe you'd buy that team's merch if you're really into it, but you don't really like care what they're advertising. Whereas if somebody that's been following my channel as an individual influencer for a long time, and I recommend something to you that has to do with what I do, like I recommend you like a really good marketing product, or I recommend you something like related to personal health, which I talk a lot about on my Patreon, you might be like, oh, well, I might buy that because I kind of know, like, and trust Devin Nash to actually do that. But that know, like, and trust hasn't been established. It's too many steps removed for the esports team. So that could be number one. Number two is there are real fragmented audience demographics, and that makes targeting really difficult in advertising. So targeted advertising is a really important thing. Things like pay-per-click, Google AdWords, and like TikTok, you can target audiences really specifically. Like you may have heard on Facebook that there's a lot of data concerns because you can target an audience of like 20 to 25-year-old females who all own a dog. Like that's a possible audience you can target for maybe pet food or something. But because your audiences are kind of all over the place with different kind of games, you have so many different target demographics. Your FPS audience is going to be different from your RTS audience. Your RTS audience is going to be different from your ARPG audience. Your ARPG audience is going to be different from your League of Legends audience. It's going to be, for example, over 40% of the people that play Valorant are female. But for CSGO, that number is like less than 10%. So that's a totally different demographic. So the ability to advertise and make targeted advertising work just is really difficult for sponsors to get behind. There's also really rapidly changing interests. Like games sort of come and go and sort of fall away. So there's rapidly changing interests and loyalties among fans and leads to instability in viewership numbers, right? The person that's a fan of one team may move to be a fan of another team. There's always kind of a joke within CLG when we were running it, which was like people ultimately just want to support the winningest team, the team that is really winning. And if you're on top, you're going to be on top. But if you're not going to, but the problem is like these positions rotate all the time and everyone is super competitive, so you can't be on top all the time. And if you're not on top all the time, well then fans are going to lose interest in you, and then you might have worse years for sponsors and better years for sponsors. And that goes back to the kind of final issue, which is something that I brought up before. Most teams have no brand power on their own, and I showed you the examples of those Twitter accounts. These are teams that literally have less engagement than like an emo teen on Twitter that's bitching about politics they're not even old enough to vote on. Like these are people that don't even have any engagement on, and these are major teams with tons of employees that monetize exclusively off of this supposedly brand power. That should really worry people, and it's something that kind of drove me crazy when all these VCs are investing tens of millions of dollars into esports for nothing like this return. And they're not just buying that return on advertising, they're buying the story, but still, you know, it's just crazy. So esports teams aren't really positioned to be in a place where they can get these returns on investment, they can get this good ROAS. And moreover, something I'm going to kind of talk about from the heart for a second here, this is sort of less objective than these reasons. We oftentimes on this channel, we cover a lot of these really objective issues where we kind of go into the math of things. And I've done that quite a bit with this advertising stuff and sort of shown objectively why it isn't true. But I want to talk about the real thing with esports that I think was lost and kind of call a few things out that I personally have found over the years. Before I do that, I just want to thank everybody. You're 24 minutes into a Devin Nash video. This one in particular is heavy for me. It's hard to make these videos. This video in particular, just I'm so close to the issue, and I'm so disappointed with what I'm going to talk about this a little bit more in a minute, but just disappointed with what's happening with esports and the rugs that were kind of pulled out from people, especially good people. Anyway, I don't know. I even feel bad in that context. Just like, if you want to support this channel, you can support by subscribing. You can also go to my Patreon, patreon.com/Devin Nash. I have over 90 videos there for $5 that talk about business and marketing and such like that. And that's all I'm going to say on that issue. I'll just keep it short. But if you're 25 minutes into a Devin Nash video, 2446 is the secret call out. Post up in the comments that you're still here, and I really appreciate you. Let's go into the section Spirit of Esports. So, gosh, how do I do this section? I don't have like a lot of notes on this one, but I'll show you a picture. Maybe that'll be good. In 2015, actually. So, this was the stadium. Here, this picture here. Madison Square Garden, 2015. I stood on stage at Madison Square Garden when we won in a blowout victory against TSM. And I remember walking into that arena and the thunder, the boom that was there, the excitement was a vibration that I will never forget in my life. I knew at that moment when all that confetti came down and we all came up on stage, it was Hotshot GG, all these awesome players, some really dear friends that I had brought even from Team Dignitas, like Darshan. Just like it was a moment that I will never ever forget. And the power of that moment can't be understated. And the fans knew it, and everyone knew it. The story of esports was alive and powerful. Something about esports was able to sell out that arena in 2 minutes. That's how long it took for those tickets to sell out. Something about esports made that entire arena fill up, and everyone there at the edge of their seat to see what would happen. And I don't think it's there anymore. The spirit of esports is failing because the stories aren't interesting anymore. And I'm going to say a couple of real things, and maybe it gets me in a little bit of trouble if this video hasn't already, but there's a lot of reasons for this, and I put the blame on quite a few things. So one of them is I don't think that the teams or the publishers have made sufficient effort to really tell the stories of these players. And to some extent, telling those stories is impossible because the publishers drove the teams to dog eat dog, basically play as hard as you can. And if you don't, you're relegated. You get kicked out of the league. And so as a result, a lot of non-English speaking players joined the North American LCS and were allowed to do this through Riot, to the point where we had entire teams of Chinese players who didn't speak English. And I'm not knocking the Chinese scene or the Korean scene, right? Like, I'm very involved with that scene. But it is really difficult for fans in North America to get through and really understand those players with those language barriers. And oftentimes, a lot of those players didn't even want to evoke the personality to really engage with those audiences and just wanted to play the game at a high level, which they did really well. But at the same time, the teams and publishers weren't telling the stories to make these players interesting. There were some really great Chinese and Korean imports who had really fascinating stories. In fact, I brought one of them in, Huhi. I brought a lot of them in. I recorded JJ to Team Dignitas, Gamsu. Like, these are really awesome people that I got to know that if they had had stories and proper content made about them, the players could have understood. The fans could have understood what these players' stories were, but the language barriers and the sort of inactivity on that part by teams and by Riot and by other people, I don't want to single out Riot here, made that very difficult to do. And simultaneously, Riot Games in particular, the LCS, had a huge focus on professionalism, and there were things like you would always have to shake people's hands, you would always have to avoid drama, and there was no cursing, there was nothing like that, there was nothing like really silly, and that was like the essence of esports was from gaming, man. Like we're from like the old Xbox 360 Call of Duty matches where people would trash talk each other and stuff. Like a little bit of that was okay, and sure, like I get the move towards like professionalism and trying to be as close to traditional sports as possible, but I think a lot of the leagues, Blizzard included, leaned way too heavy into that, and they stifled the real natural tension that came into matches like in 2015 when TSM played against CLG. That tension was there because there was a long-standing story. To this day, I don't like TSM because I am a diehard CLG fan, and I guess I can't be either of those things because they're both out of esports now. Damn it. So I don't even know what I am anymore. It's just the spirit of esports. Something got lost in the story. If you know what I'm talking about, maybe you can leave a comment about it. I'll read it. I can't exactly place my finger on what happened here, but the passion's gone. I don't fucking care anymore. I watched the LCS and it's so boring. I don't know anything that's going on. I don't care about the players or their story because no one's ever told me why I should. There's just nothing going on. It's so boring. It's reflected in the viewership that's declining year over year. It's the same with OWL. And I know those people are passionate. I know they work hard. I know I would care if I was given the right storyline. But it's all just about skin sales and tickets and media rights deals and all this bullshit. And the people that are running most of the large esports teams now are either soulless VCs or like most of the team owners that really, really cared about it are like in backseat roles or stepped out. And just no one seems to want to remember why gaming was actually good and what the spirit of competition really was. No one cares anymore. It was a money grab by big VCs. And then once it was apparent that the business model didn't make sense and that these guys finally ended up watching my YouTube videos or whatever, or found out themselves, then they all pulled out and nobody cared about the spirit of the competition. And so the spirit of competition died. And look, I think there's some other reasons. I've got some other stuff here that makes sense, right? You've got your rise of casual games. So stuff like mobile gaming, esports never really translated to, if you remember like Vainglory and stuff like that, those games like never really, despite being really good games, just like the mobile scene didn't really, Clash Royale, like those kind of things didn't really like capture that. There was like new gaming technologies that weren't really compatible with esports, so like VR and AR like never really took off, or maybe just haven't yet. But also it's just kind of like a lot of burnout too. A lot of players getting like tired, like constant travel, practice schedules. It was hard, really hard to be a player, still is. And all these reasons kind of have led to this huge esports recession. But if we're going to really get into the big problems, a lot of the media and a lot of the news around this kind of stuff is to blame. With going into this kind of stuff, like I just found a couple of articles to show you. Here's an infamous one from Forbes that I've brought up before. And you can see they think that FaZe Clan here has a valuation of $400 million. These guys, I think they saved, yeah, again, $400 million. And that they're growing. The TSM here has a $540 million. This is like a 2022, this article was made, right? 100 Thieves at $460 million. $440 million for these companies. VCs and media people arbitrarily valued these brands. And these brands have no such value, right? Why do we know that? We know that because we can go to FaZe Clan, which ended up IPOing, and we can look at their current market cap, and we can see that their current market cap right now is $34 million, less than my stupid agency that I run, right? Like, privately, right? So, like, the valuation of this company, this is a real valuation of FaZe Clan. And they really... Thank God they went public, because I've been making videos about FaZe Clan for years, and I knew that it was, that there was something up, but now it proves it, because they decided to go public. Snoop Dogg exited the board, said, yeah, I'm out of here. The stock is just plummeting to the ground. And it just shows to show that a company is only worth what people will pay for it. So when you post these valuations, these incredible valuations of these companies, there was this lie that was told to everybody, the industry, the team owners, the sponsors, and everybody kind of believed that esports was this huge thing, that it was this giant growing thing that had massive potential, clearly, and that they were on track to get all of these hundreds of millions of people to watch content and buy things. And it never materialized. It never materialized because it wasn't really there. It was literally, I don't know what, I mean, I don't know if I have a better word for it, a circle jerk. It was everybody just patting each other on the back, saying, yeah, we're worth more and more money. And the only teams that ever had anything to show for it were people like 100 Thieves that brought on tons of content creators and then had a really successful apparel brand. But even 100 Thieves recently, a company that I have heavily encouraged and have been very positive about, has I think, lost their roots of making core content about their content creators, and as a result have gone through massive layoffs and had a lot of problems, to the point where Nadeshot actually had a clip basically saying that the esports model was unsustainable and that he needs to move away from it. And Reginald said that basically as well. And, we can look at that here.
The article came out a couple weeks ago. A lot of people are, like, questioning, even former employees, like, why the fuck did you guys start Juvie? Like, that's...
Which is their energy drink.
You first started raising money with 100 Thieves, and you were trying to raise capital to keep your business alive. If you weren't profitable yet, the only thing investors at that time were asking about were, are you doubling revenue year over year? Like, are you continuing? How much money are you making? So
right, and so this is like the why that investors brought in, basically expecting esports teams to have valuations like tech companies and pull revenue year over year, which we already explained is impossible.
Esports as a whole, like it hasn't been monetized at the level which a lot of outside investors expected. And I've been in esports for a long time. I know how difficult it is for teams to make money, but the business was great. We were doubling revenue year over year over year.
So this is what he's talking about, what we just talked about, where they're just doubling revenue. And this is, keep in mind, like when he's doing this, almost every esports team alongside him is failing, but he's doing this because of the content, of the story that's going into the content creators he's bringing in, your Valkyries, your Courages, right? And he's doing this on apparel sales.
We were crushing. Like, okay, in 15 years, if esports never... shakes out the way that some people think it will or some people don't think it will, how do we insulate our business to make sure that the people that are working here have a career? And how do we make a multi-billion-dollar company? And with Juvie, I was going to do it after 100 Thieves, but at the time, our CRO, Maddie Lee, who I love to death, Barstool had a lot of success with, like, Pink Whitney and a lot of, like, products that they built in unison with another brand. And that was, like, a brand-new revenue stream for them. And so Maddie had brought up, like, what do you think about doing, like, an alcohol? And so I started talking about the energy drink. And I know it's a super competitive market, but it's just another, we have this of any ties to the gaming community because we can get it.
So you understand that, like, Nadeshot realized in this that he had to expand to something like energy drinks because there just is no model in esports to make this kind of money and to keep doing what these expectations of his investors. I mean, it's directly what he says here. And if you look at TSM in their recent announcement, they say the exact same thing. They're like, look, like, we can't make any money on esports. Like, there's no vertical here. We've also seen content creators get into the scene. And I think a lot of people have wondered about this, where, Ludwig bought a North American Challenger team, allegedly for $500,000. Also, Moist Critical, I think they're running that team together, bought Moist Esports. Now, people might be saying, well, look, like, maybe esports has a future because all these content creators are coming into it. But these content creators literally said that it's not making money. I have a quote here from that somewhere. I guess I can't find it. I guess this my notes are too much. Oh, I can. Here it is. It's, I think this is from, here, let's look at where this link goes.
Show them. What the fuck do you mean? I don't make any money off of it. But Ludwig and I know that. Like, Lud signed up. No, he knew our financials. He knew how much we were losing. And it's a lot. But the difference is, we know. But the thing is, it's fun. The content is unreal. That's why you see creator-led orgs are kind of working. Like, it's not...
For sure, yeah.
Not just Moist. You have KC. Carmine Corp is killing it. I think Carmine Corp is actually almost profitable.
OTK and things like that.
Which is unheard of in the space. Carmine Corp.
Profitable, which is unheard of in the space.
It's led by French streamers.
Right?
Well, so French streamer, Kometo. And they fucking kill it. They're doing amazing. And now you have Disguised Toast with Disguised and Valorant. I think even XQC's toying around with the idea of getting in the space. Like, the creator-led orgs are really, like, the only viable way right now. Because... like, it's content. The product is content.
So what Charlie's saying here is that he knows getting into esports that he's going to lose money, and he knows that if anything is going to succeed in the esports space, it's going to be by extension of the content creators that are making that content. And he's absolutely right. He's absolutely right, right? Ludwig has said several times before, nobody is making money off of esports. So what happened with the main esports teams, these teams with these supposedly huge valuations, is they lost the vision. They lost the vision of that content. they lost the vision of producing that content, so that they and keeping it up so they could keep their sales up, their apparel, they can make it possible. And simultaneously with all the other problems in the spirit of esports, we've kind of more or less seen a complete collapse in the esports scene. So where do we go from here? Well, I just think that the major publisher leagues are on the decline. The LCS is in huge trouble. It's lost two of its major teams. Most of the teams don't have a lot of brand power, and the League of Legends series is declining. Valorant is kind of supposed to be the angel that sort of saves major franchised esports. Do we need to talk about OWL and CDL? They're screwed. Just to let you know, go back to my former videos on that I've been making for years talking about that. I think enough is said. There's nowhere to go from there. I think where esports lives is in the hearts and minds of niche people that like to play competitive games, but it will never have this hard-hitting success that everyone expected, that the investors expected. And we're not likely to see investor money ever again at 0% interest rates like we saw come into esports from 2018 to 2021. That time is over. And I don't think that you're ever going to see that kind of VC money or large publishers that are going to be able to charge franchise fees like that. And if you look at Valorant, right, that was just an application process. There was no charge to get into Valorant. It's a really different business model. Riot understands that those days are over. And now they're doing revenue share on Valorant, and they're offering teams a part of the cut. And Valorant, because of that, if it becomes a successful esport, may actually sustain teams a lot better, because I think Riot has learned a lot of lessons from the LCS. But we had to lose the LCS to learn those lessons. And now with Valorant, who knows how they'll do against CSGO 2. I think that aside from Valorant and aside from some of the core grassroots scene of esports, which is stuff like the fighting game community, like your Street Fighters and like your Smash. The Smash has taken a huge hit this year. I mean, that's a whole other video in of itself that I think I made already. Esports really lives in the hearts and minds of just people that are really passionate about competitive gaming. I think collegiate is really healthy and is a good model, because collegiate has the potential to be funded by greater universities that don't really care about the ROI of it and more care about giving students opportunities and things they're really passionate about, hopefully. So there is something to be said about esports and collegiate. I've always been really passionate about the collegiate space. I used to go around the whole country talking on behalf of Twitch about esports to collegiate programs, and built a lot of League of Legends collegiate programs. So I'm really passionate about that. I think there's still a future in collegiate. But as an industry, as a viable advertiser, as an industry that is supposedly going to eclipse traditional sports and be the next wave after football and baseball, everything that all of the baseball and NFL owners that invested in the esports teams expected to be, it's not there. We've lost too much of the spirit. And we've lost, and it doesn't make sense to run an org. So until, what would have to happen, I mean, to make this kind of stuff make sense, it would just have to be such drastic stuff that I don't think anyone is prepared for. Even people that know the truth of this, it would be so draconian to cut down these costs. You'd have to cut down pretty much all of your staff. You'd have to reduce player salaries across the board by 60 to 80%. Players are getting paid way too much, way, way too much for what the returns were. Everybody moves so quickly towards the traditional sports model of paying players millions of dollars without having the media rights deals and the sponsorships to support that. We were years and years out, maybe a decade out, of having that kind of money, and yet people started paying $1 million salaries across the board. It's just way too much for those players to get paid. In order for this scene to be healthy, pretty much all those salaries probably have to be reduced by 80% or more. I don't think anyone is really willing to take that kind of heat. I'm even going to get a heat for saying it. But simultaneously, the training facilities, housing, compounds, way down, all that stuff. If you want to succeed in these esports teams, you got to go hard on sales, and you have to commit all of your players to deliverables and doing sponsorships. And you have to get players into the mindset of working really hard and earning it. Versus just kind of practicing and scrimming all day and then the sort of playing other games on their off time. And I just don't think that esports is mature enough to really handle a difficult recession. I speak of that because I'm not just an esports person, right? I've run businesses through COVID when I had a operating budget of 2 months left, and I know what it takes to run a business lean and to make sacrifices. And it's not something that I think most of these esports team people are prepared to do. I just do not think that the maturity of the industry is there for truly draconian CEOs to make the very tough decisions, like the ones they're making in tech right now, laying off tens of thousands of employees because they absolutely have to in order to sustain their business models. That is what it takes to save esports. I just don't think they have it in them. I think that the teams, the very few teams I see that stay really lean and they stay in their lane, maybe they play, they sponsor a couple of people in the fighting game community. Maybe they sponsor a couple of people in like places where salaries still make sense, like Rocket League or like Smash. Maybe those teams have a future where they can kind of make it sustainable and almost profitable. And to Charlie's point that we discussed before, I also think there's potential in the content creator leagues. I mean, like the content creator competitive scene of stuff like Charlie and Ludwig, they're basically running these businesses off their YouTube ad revenue and their own brands, which is so high that they literally have so much money they don't know where to spend it. So they're just kind of throwing it into the pit of esports. That's fine. Like, those teams could run as long as those people don't get bored. And to some extent, if the spirit of esports had kept alive, maybe we would have had auspicious millionaires and billionaires continuously throwing money into esports just because it was the cool thing to do. But like we talked about with that spirit problem, that kind of all got lost. So the interest from the audience not being there doesn't even make it sustainable from that perspective. So I'm not real excited about where esports is going, especially from a publisher-like perspective. I just think we've taken so many hard hits this year, and it's going to take years and years and years to recover. And even then, I don't know how many more 2015-esque Madison Square Garden 2-minute sellout type of things are going to be, unless esports teams really get lean, really focus on the content, and they make it about the players and the storylines and start to get people to reinvigorate their spirits. It's a real dark time for esports, and there's a lot of people to blame. I'm probably one of them. I mean, I love the whole thing, and I'm grateful that I presided over the championships at CLG. I tried to solve the problem of creating interesting stories within CLG, and I don't think I ever succeeded from a brand development perspective. It was a really, really hard problem to solve. How to make people really care about the brand. It's a problem that I see other teams are not solving either. And the teams that do solve that still have a chance to go somewhere. Like 100 Thieves solved it in the past. They're going to have to go revisit that and teach audiences to care again. But some people don't even care, like, right? Like some of the LCS slots that are just never tried to build a brand or kind of paid lip service to it by making a few casual tweets are just not going to go anywhere. And these teams are doomed to fail. Most teams are doomed to fail. So hopefully, but I don't really have a takeaway for you. I mean, it's a shit show. It sucks because I think the best days of esports are behind us. And I hope at the very least, you watched a video and you understand why. And maybe you can be a small part of saving it if you're interested in doing that or kind of understanding like where you can impact it, like in collegiate or small scale or grassroots. But that's the story of esports, as much as I can explain in under an hour. And I just don't see where it goes from here. It's really, really sad. Obviously, as of the time of this recording, I'll end with this. Today was the announcement that CLG was dissolving as a brand. And I think in a really weird way, it's sort of the culmination of all of esports and sort of what happened. CLG is a legendary brand, and there's so many good people that work there. There's so many people that put in hours and hours and hours of blood, sweat, and tears, literally, to make that org happen. I don't think I'm ready to talk about it. I don't know if I'm gonna make a video about it on its own or whatever. I guess the best I could do is like tell the story of esports, and kind of caution against what happened so that like more people don't get hurt. But I really feel a strong way about what happened to CLG and what happened to TSM, as much as those guys drive me crazy. all of these good people that, like, there's so much passion in the esports industry. There's a place that people that work there would work day and night constantly just to be a part of that. That to see it all get kind of taken over by big money, and like Nateshot said, right, like just the expectation of doubling and tripling revenue every single year, making it all about the money, and the competition spirit just kind of fading away. That really sucks to make a video like this. And I really hope that I can make a video someday about a team that's doing it right, like I did for 100 Thieves a few years ago, that's telling the story of players and reinvigorating all of our interest in it. Because competitive gaming is one of the coolest things that's ever been around, and it is the entire reason why I'm here today. The things that I was able to do through it. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to tell a story of what everything at CLG, but I think I'm angry most of all at the venture capital money that ran this industry into the ground and the publishers that let it happen. But at least I can tell a story on my YouTube channel that everybody's interested. Leave a comment with what you think. I don't have anything happy to end this video, but thanks, everybody. I just tried to really explain something that I'm passionate about and hopefully get everybody on the same page of why everything happened. So you can let me know what you think. Thanks, everybody. Bye.